Betting on sports can be hard, but hiring Morgan & Morgan is easy. Morgan & Morgan is America's largest injury law firm. They have over 100 offices nationwide and more than 1,000 lawyers. Their fee is free unless they win. For more information, go to forthepeople.com/bestbets or dial pound law, that's pound 529, from your cell phone. That's forthepeople.com/bestbets. This is a paid advertisement.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It is the Lombardi Line. Dave Ross and Michael Lombardi here with you as we get ready for week number 12 in the NFL to kick off tonight in Cleveland between the Steelers and the Browns. We got a lot to get to there to break that game down. We're going to have Mike Palm join us in studio. Chris Sims is going to join us at the end of the program here, Michael. But I did want to get to some news and notes around the league very quickly to get your opinion on them. One, let's just talk about the great state of New York and what's going on there in both those teams. And it's not a lot of good. Daniel Jones has been reduced to the fourth quarterback now on the depth chart, Michael. Can you just inform people what exactly that means?
Well, they put Tim Boyle, God knows why, but they put Tim Boyle, and I'm sure he's a wonderful kid, and I don't mean to be critical of him as a person, but as a football player, it's hard to put him in a game, but they put him on the practice squad. What they don't want to do is risk the $25 million that they owe him because it's only guaranteed for injury. It's not guaranteed for skill and injury, which means if he's healthy at the end of the year, they can cut him. Now, they can't cut him now because they only have $3 million worth of cap room, and his acceleration would be too much for them to handle, and it would push it over. So they have a really hard time handling it. So they have to carry him. They have to pay him anyway, right? His salary's guaranteed. So they have to pay him, but they don't want to play him. So it's really a violation of the spirit of the collective bargaining agreement because they're using cap evasion. So they put him as the third. That's why they said this is a football decision. But anybody with a brain knows that as much as you may not like Daniel Jones, he's better than Tommy DeVito. He's better than Tim Boyle. Now, whether he's better than Drew Locke, I don't know. How they came up with this, I have no idea what they made, why they went to DeVito over Drew Locke. They wasted $5 million on Drew Locke. Drew Locke doesn't even understand why he's not the starting quarterback. So to me, it's just a little bit of it, not a little bit. It's a lot of the continuation of the mess that is called the New York Football Giants, and it hasn't changed. But we got to peek inside, David, to their thought process, their decision-making, their team-building element this year in Hard Knocks. And I tell you, I was embarrassed as a former personnel guy, worked in the league for 35 years. That's not how it works. Fans did not see realistically what goes on behind closed doors. Even Pat McAfee said on his show, it looked like a bunch of guys at a bar just making decisions. It looked like a fantasy team. And he's right. That's what it looked like. It looked like a bunch. Hey, we could sign this guy. What do you think? Okay, let's do that. Let's try that. You know, like that's not how you build a team. You have models and you say, okay, if we sign this guy, what does it look like? If we sign that guy, what does it look like? But to me, This is the New York Football Giants, and if I'm John Mara, at some point you're going to have a talk, a come to Jesus conversation with yourself to say, wait a minute, maybe I just need to revamp this whole entire organization.
Fascinating to watch. This thing just looks terrible from the outside, and certainly on the inside, not looking a whole lot better there. Same thing with the Jets, crosstown, of course, and we're hearing more reports about Woody Johnson wanting to bench Aaron Rodgers. We talked about that, and maybe Robert Saleh went to the wall to keep his quarterback as the quarterback, and then that cost Saleh his job. Joe Douglas gets fired 24 hours ago. Is there anything, when you hear all these things and how all these things have now fallen into place, does it just go back to one guy for you and Woody Johnson that he's just going to do what does? And people wanted to blame Rodgers for the Saleh firing, but really, this is all about the owner, right?
I said that at the time. Everybody wanted to blame Rodgers for this. No, the owner's making every call. He's running the team. He might as well be the general manager. You know, he's going to hire somebody with that name, but they got to go through him to get everything. So, look, you know, it's funny. You wonder how the leaks happen. Mm. Okay, well, here's how leaks happen. You know, when initially he was, after every game, he was having Saleh and Douglas meet with him to discuss the game. What happened? What went wrong? What went right? Why we won? Why we lost? Okay, every owner should have that. Two people and the owner, three people, that's it. Now, So what it was happening in those meetings were he wasn't liking what he was hearing from Douglas and Saleh. So he wanted more people to come into the meeting. And you know what happens when you bring more people into the meeting? Leaks. The people start talking. There are more people that talk. And so, you know, now all of a sudden, now we know what's been going on behind the Jets, that he wanted to bench Rodgers, that he wanted to do certain things. To me, it just smells of dysfunction at the highest level. They're never going to win. Jet fans know it. Jet fans can't wait for him to go become part of the ambassador program under Trump. They can't wait for that. It's their only hope. Their hope isn't we're going to get Ben Johnson. Their hope isn't we're going to hire Kirby Smart. Their hope is we got to get Woody out of the building.
Baseball season's right around the corner there, New Yorkers. Hang in there. It's ugly with the Giants and the Jets right now. Let's get to our best bet. Of course, got the Thursday night game, and they are, of course, brought to us by GBank, the official bank of VSiN. Steelers, Browns, snow game, Michael. You laid it out perfectly in hour number one. If they tell you 81% chance, you're going to get some snow tonight off of Lake Erie. The numbers dipped down from 4 to 3.5. The total got as low as 36. It's bounced back up to 37 after opening in the low 40s. What do you expect to see tonight between this classic battle between the Steelers and Browns?
Well, the Browns have only scored over 20 points once this year, and they did it against the Ravens, right? And that was Jameis Winston's first start, and he looked really good. Last week, they gained 443 yards and didn't turn the ball over. They missed a field goal, but they only scored 14 points. I mean, they've only scored more than 18 points one time, and that was at home in perfect weather. And Jameis has never played in temperatures below 40 degrees. Believe that or not, it's hard to believe, but that's true. So we don't even, and so we know he's turnover prone. And frankly, the Baltimore game that they won, the play before the touchdown pass was an interception that Kyle Hamilton dropped.
Yep.
So, you know, I think to me, everything tells you you got to take the Brownies here just from trends, right? We know this. We know that Tomlin is 0-7 on the road on Thursday night. He's 1-6 against the spread, you know, and on Thursday night, on the road, straight up, he's 2-8. I mean, it's hard. It's hard. I know it's a short week. I know it's not a long trip. The Browns had to come back from New Orleans. But I think one of the things that sticks out to you is underdogs in the AFC North have been a cash cow. They're 48-31 since 2018. It's the best by far. These teams, forget the records. They play against one another, and it's hard, and it's tough, and it's physical. And I think that's probably why you got to take the Browns in the 3.5. I think that's why the number went from 4 down to 3.5. On paper, this should not be a close game. And frankly, if they were playing in Pittsburgh, you would be all over the Steelers. But because it's in Cleveland, because the snow, because of the rivalry, you have to almost lean towards taking the Browns and holding your breath because you're worried about a quarterback that can't really that doesn't function in cold weather.
Very quickly, to that point about Tomlin, the lack of success on Thursday night, is that just an anomaly, do you think? Or is there something to that without having a full week to prepare?
I think Thursday nights are hard games, right? And I think, to me, he plays such a physical brand of football that his team's probably not really ready to play that brand of football. If they don't play physical, they can't win, right? If they are not they have to bring it every single play. You know, they have to battle. They love close games. But if they're not ready to be as physical as they need to be, that's what happens. And on a short week, sometimes it's really hard to be as physical as you need to be.
The GBank Visa Signature Card is your best bet. It delivers 1% cashback rewards on eligible gaming transactions, 2% cashback rewards on all other eligible purchases. For more info, head over to VSiN.com/GBank. That's VSIN.com/GBank. Subject to credit approval, terms and conditions do apply. We got a big one in Green Bay, Michael, between the Niners and the Packers. Some injury concerns here with the Niners, so let's get to it. It is our game of the week.
This is the Lombardi Line Game of the Week, presented by Lowe's. Here's Michael Lombardi.
Michael, we always look to, obviously, the quarterback position. We know Brock Purdy's a little bit dinged up, but it looks like he's going to be able to go. When you look at the defensive side of the ball for each team, if I had asked you this question in the spring or summer, you'd look at me like I had 8 heads and say, of course, it's the Niners that have the edge defensively. But with the issues and the injuries to Nick Bosa, with what Jeff Hafley's done as a defensive coordinator in year one. Is this a fair question or a fair fight as to who has the better defense?
Well, the Packers have the better defense. They have better rush guys. I mean, you know, with Rashard Gary, Igbo, the kid Kingsley Igbo is very good. You know, they Luke Van Ness, I don't think he's a great player. They play this Brendan Cox kid who they signed as a college free agent in 23. He's very good. I mean, they're good. They can rush. They've got good inside people with Wyatt and Kenny Clark, and they can put pressure on you. I think their linebackers are not as explosively fast as you need. You know, they're bigger guys. They want to have physicality. And their secondary, to me, they've hit with two young safeties. I mean, this Evan Williams kid who they picked in the fourth round is very good, you know, to go along with another kid they picked in the fifth round. And then Nickelback Bullard they picked in the second. No, this is a really good young defensive team. They don't play as well as sometimes as they need to play because you can throw the football on them. I'm not sure they're good enough at corner. But the Niners are not good enough at wide receiver. I think they're going to really struggle outside. I mean, they have one outside receiver. Debo's not an outside receiver. He's an inside receiver. He's a running back who can't really run. He averages 2.9 yards a carry. So, yeah, I think the Packers have this advantage. Now, look, remember, let's go back to that playoff game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Back then, what happened in the playoff game was the Packers melted down. I mean, they melted down in the fourth quarter, and that was the killer. And, you know, the Packers had a chance. They had the ball 11 minutes in the fourth quarter, and they couldn't put – they turned it over, they punted, and they missed a field goal. They had lost the ball on downs, and they turned it over on interception. So, to me, the key element of this game is going to be, can Josh Jacobs replace what Aaron Jones was able to do, right? I think that's the key. Aaron Jones was really good for him last year. And I think, to me, that's going to be part of the other thing that has to happen. Can they be able to do that? Aaron Jones was 18 for 106 on the ground. But the fourth quarter, they only had two first downs. They were 1 for 3 on third down, and they only ran 13 plays in the fourth quarter. Now that's where they lost the game, Dave.
Yeah, they had control of that game. Well put. And that fourth quarter, you look back on it, that missed field goal was massive. They had a really good chance to win the game. That is the Lombardi Line Game of the Week presented by Lowe's. We will be back with Mike Palm in studio next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We are back here on the Lombardi Line. Dave Ross and Michael Lombardi here with you on our Thursdays, Michael, as we well know. I know you have to gear up for this portion of the show because Mike Palm joins us in studio. He is, of course, the Circuit VP of Operations here, does a great job of the network. You can follow Mike as I do on X at Mike Palm Circa. Great to have you back. I know it was a trouble getting back after you had a big dinner with Michael, and you guys were at the Borgata with Thomas Gable.
I met Thomas at the Borgata, and I stayed there. By the way, I was in Washington, D.C. for the AGA Winter Board of Directors meetings, and so I said, heck, I never get to the East Coast.
Yeah.
Let me rent a car and drive up to AC
dinner.
3.5 hours.
3.5.
By the way, Maryland, very pretty. A lot of color with the leaves.
It's not as good as Virginia.
Well, I don't know. I can't say the same about Delaware. What's Delaware? I mean, no offense to the people in Delaware, but I mean, everything was just construction and my goodness. Anyhow, yeah, we had dinner at an Italian restaurant there in Atlantic City, and we did Palms Pressing 20 is really what it was. We grilled Michael for 2 hours there, and then they made us get up because they had 50 people waiting on a Tuesday night for our table.
It sounds like a good meal, gentlemen. I'm glad you guys got to break bread together.
He had a pork chop the size of the state of Rhode Island. I've never seen anything like this.
It's unbelievable. I took half of it home with me, Mike. I mean, it's the greatest. It's called the Brooklyn Pork Chop. I think it's the size of Brooklyn. It's amazing.
That's fantastic.
It was huge.
It really is.
All right, next time, if I ever get back to the East Coast.
It's wonderful, but it was great to see you. Yeah, we were talking. I want to hit, you know, we saw Sam Darnold creep up on the injury report. You were talking that night at dinner that you're not sold on Minnesota's advancing in as any further than maybe getting a wild card and being one and done. Talk about that a little bit.
I mean, well, they're going to, you know, Detroit's going to win the division, right? So they've got to win three on the road. I just think this defense is a lot of smoke and mirrors.
Really?
But I think they know that, right? And
yep.
Flores has got to use his blitz package.
He covers
they can't cover the back. They
right.
can't. I mean, you saw You saw Tennessee throw a 90-yard touchdown pass, and then they throw a 70-yard that was called back in the span of like 5 minutes.
Yes.
It's all smoke and mirrors with this defense. I mean, Michael, if the playoffs started today, though, it would be Minnesota at Atlanta in the 5-4 game.
Oh,
so we would be forced to take Minnesota, I think, at that point to win at least one game
I
in the playoffs,
so
right? Yeah. Even though it would be the Kirk or Chains revenge
Atlanta's
game.
Atlanta's a fraud. Atlanta can't stop anybody.
Yeah.
I look at this, guys, and for somebody who's got a ticket on the Vikings at 11-1 to win the division, I hope that that doesn't hold out. But the Lions do feel like that wagon you don't want to be in front of.
Well, they're like, I mean, is every game a revenge game for him? I mean, what, like every week I look and I say, Goff's in there with a 40-point lead in the fourth quarter. Is this the Joey Harrington Heisman campaign they're doing for him? Or does Campbell have a bone to pick with everybody? Like, What did Doug Peterson do to him? I mean, I'm convinced Dan Campbell wanted Doug Peterson fired on Sunday, and they have a bye going in. Yeah. We'll get into this in the Pressing 3 a little bit about Jacksonville. But, like, is it a revenge game every week? I get it in Dallas. Now he's making tackles eligible to kneel down at the end of the game. Everything, he's got some edge to him. He wants to just destroy everyone.
I like it, though. Michael, don't you? this is a guy that wants to go. We signed up for 60. We're playing all 60. They're going to lay 7.5 against the Colts this week. Like, Campbell just goes out there and he tries to, it looks like he's really trying to make a point that you remember this game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with Mike, though. I think there's at some point you got to take your best players out of the game, right? I mean, Hayden Hooker can get some reps. I mean, look, if he throws two touchdown passes, some idiot team is able to trade a first-round pick for him. So why not put him in there, right?
Yeah, that's a good point, too. Let's talk about Circuit Survivor a little bit here.
This is where the rubber meets the road now.
Because
here comes the complication. Well, you got to now make 3 picks in 10 days.
Oh, boy.
Because of the Thanksgiving. So I have to tell you, I thought for anybody that advanced last week that didn't use the Lions, it was a great week because they still have the Lions available against the Bears on Thanksgiving.
But we saw what happened last Thanksgiving where the Packers
this
came.
The Bears,
in.
Come on. I mean, Eberflus is now going to double down and say, I didn't want to get any more yards before the field goal.
It's amazing.
Kyle Santos said he wanted the ball on the right hash. He kicks every extra point from they didn't even try to move it to the right hash. What is going on here?
I have a contest in town.
No, it's so bad.
I went 13-2.
The cover-up's worse than the event. The cover-up just insults our intelligence, right?
McLaurin's 12 yards.
You know, Zach Taylor, I didn't want to get a holding penalty, so I ran it 3 times in the line. Okay, Zach, really? You got Joe Burrow, right? Come on.
I'm with you guys. The Bears let one get away, and that will be
the opponent. Let's not gloss over the fact that down by 5 – with 12 minutes to go, LaFleur doesn't want to kick a 22-yard field goal. What's wrong with taking it? He's got 4th and goal from the 6.
Mike and I
talked
about that.
You're down 5.
Yeah,
I mean,
points.
That might have been the worst decision of the whole. That's worse than Eberflus running the ball into the line with 30 seconds left. I mean, what is going on here? These coaches hate points. Zach Taylor hates points. LaFleur hates points.
It's a get-out-of-jail-free card, Mike. They know that if they do that, people in the analytics community are going to go, hey, that was the right call, when it's not the right call.
Not at all. But let's try to take this in 3 parts.
Okay.
Let's do a 3-part Survivor. So let's get through this Sunday.
Well, we got 99 left.
We lost 6.
Okay.
2 were on Cleveland on Sunday.
Oh, boy.
I don't like to criticize anybody's picks. I don't know what the angle was there, the Jameis Winston revenge.
Yeah, I think that was it.
I don't know. And then 4 went out with San Francisco.
You can understand that.
San Francisco. I was watching in-game, the in-game number, right? When Seattle gets stopped on 3rd and inches and 4th and inches with 4 minutes to go, San Francisco was -800 on the endgame money line.
Oof.
I thought about taking a shot at Seattle because it's too big of a number,
sure.
Right? They
got to
get a stop.
Yep.
And then, but anyhow, and we'll get into the West in the Pressing 3-2. I think that there are 4 usable games this weekend that people should consider.
Okay.
I think you should consider Tampa Bay on the road against the Giants. I think I would play the command. I would just play against the Cowboys till I couldn't play against the Cowboys. They're not even an NFL team, Dave.
They're not.
You can't make a number big enough on this team.
10.5.
You can't make a number. I told Michael at dinner the other night, I said, when they had the weird head slap penalty before the half.
Oh, God.
I said, McCarthy, I'm sitting at the Caesar Sportsbook at the Capital One Center, you know, with all, you know, that demographic, and they're all on Houston. And
sure.
I said, McCarthy should not take the points off the board because the best he can do here is still get 3, and then it's 4th and 2. I said, what if he can't run the ball? Why would they go 4th? And here they come out in this passing formation. And he said, oh, you were right. You knew it. I said, anybody can see it. I mean,
Oh, that's
Louis
dope.
Braille can see what's going on with McCarthy and this team. All right, this is a joke. I would play the Commanders. I think Dolphins are playable here.
Yep.
But they're playable a lot of game. But they're playable here against the Patriots.
7 over the Patriots, yep.
And, you know, the team that has the least, only 14 people have the Texans left. They are the team with the least amount left. I throw them in there, but maybe you want to save them for Christmas. Mm. Your thoughts quickly, Michael, on this weekend between Bucks, Commanders, and Dolphins for Survivor pick.
I'm taking the Commanders. I'm taking the team with 10-day rest against the secondary. I don't care if Bland's back or not. I don't think the Cowboys have any really interest in the game. I don't. I think, to me, Jerry can say they haven't given up, but, you know, they know Cooper Rush is the quarterback. I think Washington will come out. They need to get themselves recharged after losing to Philadelphia and losing to Pittsburgh at home. So I think they'll throw the ball. And, look, they can't stop a good passing game in Dallas. If they can block Parsons, they win the game. I take Washington.
I tend to agree, guys. Right. Yep.
I want to say something about the Commanders, though.
Sure.
I noticed this on the Monday night game against the – when did they play Thursday night game against – when did they play?
Philadelphia.
One of them night games.
Thursday night, yep.
That Jaden Daniels looked very cold.
He did.
Didn't he look cold?
Yeah, LSU.
But he looked like he was very uncomfortable the whole
game.
And
Arizona State, too, Dave.
Yeah, and Arizona State.
He was cold. So, I mean, think about this as we go to the playoffs, if they have to go to a cold weather game.
He looked freezing.
He looked freezing.
He looked, yes.
All right, so now we get to Thanksgiving. So only the obvious choice, obviously, is the Lions, right?
Yes.
And I say this because the Chiefs on Black Friday are part of Thanksgiving, but don't you want them as an option on Christmas? This Christmas lineup stuff. So only 35 have the Lions. I mean, if you had two picks left, you could go Giants and Cowboys and do the Derek's double option and get through that game because you'll never use those two again.
Oh, boy.
Not all 99 have the Giants. No one's ever used them,
oh
and 93 have the Cowboys. Here's interesting. I hear a lot of people say they're saving the Packers for Thanksgiving. Tua at night at Lambeau. What do you think about that? Would you use the Packers in Survivor on Thanksgiving against the Dolphins, Michael?
Well, if they lose to San Francisco this week, you got to think it's a must-win, right? Mm. I mean, it becomes a must-win, you know? And look, they haven't been great at home this year. I mean, one of their wins at home was with Malik Willis playing quarterback. Even the Houston game, you know, they struggled to finish that game off, and they won it, but it wasn't pretty. They turned the ball over. Look, I think Jordan Love, as we haven't talked about, Jordan Love, his on-target percentage has gone down, meaning he's not throwing the ball as accurately as he did last year, and his bad ball throws have gone up. And so he hasn't played to the level. Now, it could be injury. We get that, right? Mm-hmm. That happens all the time. But he's very inconsistent. I mean, last week, I thought LaFleur was protecting him. I thought LaFleur should have thrown the ball more against the Bears defense that couldn't cover. I thought he kind of held them back a little bit. You know, the Packers are – the interesting thing about the Packers, Mike, is they're one of the worst third-down teams in football, believe it or not, with all those skill players they have. And where they're really good is they get first downs and two downs.
Yep, and Jordan Love has not been right since the Brazil game back there week one against the Eagles. He's been in and out of the lineup. All right, it's Palms Pressing 3. That is next here in the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We continue the Lombardi Line. Dave Ross, Michael Lombardi, enjoying our conversation as we do on a Thursday with Mike Palm here in studio. And I asked you this before, Mike. Like, you don't get – I know Michael Lombardi's not nervous. He's answered a million questions in his day. But, Mike, when they come from you in the Palms Pressing 3, they have a little bit more gravitas. So, America, get ready. It is time for Palms Pressing 3.
Pressing. Yes, I say it's pressing.
Pressing. Why? The pressure don't happen.
This is Palms Pressing 3.
Now, my mother told me never to answer a question with a question.
Sir, my client has answered every question asked by this committee with the utmost sincerity.
All right, Michael, as we alluded to in the previous segment, on Sunday, the Lions demolished the Jags 52-6, and the game wasn't as close as the score. Dan Campbell's charges outgained Jacksonville 645 yards to 170. the largest differential in an NFL game since 1979. Now, here's the stat that really jumped out at me. I'm going to take you back, Michael. Remember when the Patriots played the Rams in the Super Bowl? Michael was at the South Point with Brent Musburger, and he did a symposium, Budweiser's and betting. Remember, Michael? It was a tough choice for me because the same night, Amal Shaw ran a competing symposium at the Jan Jones Lounge at the Poker Palace in North Las Vegas. It was called Cognac and Cop-Outs. But I decided to go to the South Point. And Michael, I made the most money of any Super Bowl ever I did because I listened to Michael, and he talked about Jared Goff's eye level. And Jared Goff, for three straight years, his yards per attempt had gone down from 7 to 5.9 to 5.3. And Belichick would keep his eye level low. And, of course, we all know they scored 3 points. And we win every possible bet on that game. Jared Goff averaged 13.6 yards per attempt in this game. Think about that.
Wow.
13 points. So here's my question. What can we glean from this game moving forward for bettors? All right. The Jacksonville Jaguars, let's just go back a year and a half. They're a 97-yard Chad Henne touchdown drive away from beating the Chiefs at Arrowhead in the divisional round and opened last year 6-1 to this point. Are they strictly a play against the rest of the year? Should bettors take this as their number one thing to look at? Can't this week throw in a bye. But should bettors look at fading the Jags? I mean, what is Dougie Fresh and the rest of his staff focused on now? And for that matter, upper management, aren't they just making phone calls trying to figure out where they're going to work next year, Michael? I mean, I know the players are still playing for contract, but this team has no focus at this point, and I don't know anything to hang their hat on. So, Michael, should we fade the Jags?
Absolutely. Mac Jones has put up 13 points in 2 weeks. Trevor Lawrence isn't coming back. The team knows Mac Jones isn't any good. They've been outscored 64-13 the last two games. Now, Detroit did a lot of that themselves. But, look, I think once the coach has lost his grip on the team, and I don't know why they haven't made a change, because probably they can't give it to Ryan Nielsen, which is really an unbelievable story. Ryan Nielsen did a wonderful job in Atlanta last year. They were the third-best red zone team. They were the fourth-best third-down team in football last year. The Falcons were. They've actually gotten worse defensively with Raheem Morris than they were with Ryan Nielsen. But since he's gone down there, they haven't held anybody in the last 4 weeks to under 400 yards. I mean, they're a sieve on defense, and a lot of that, it comes back to the head coach, who runs basically a completely dysfunctional system. I mean, it's just, there's no accountability. There's no standard of excellence. It's what I said 3 years, 4 or 5 years ago, whenever it was. He's just not a good head coach. He won a Super Bowl, but that doesn't make you a great head coach. Ray Malavasi went to a Super Bowl. It doesn't make you a great head coach. So I think, to me, Mike, you have to fade as long, whether it's C.J. Beathard, which I think will be the next starting quarterback when they play Houston, whether it's C.J. Beathard or whomever, they're like the Cowboys. You're going to have to keep fading them until the end.
I think you're right. The difference is this Jacksonville team has talent. This Cowboy team is
Jerry did nothing to build this team. They've lost Kirk, they've lost the other receiver, Gabe Davis. Their offensive line's a mess. I mean, and Doug didn't work them hard when they were winning, let alone work them hard when they're losing.
Longing for the halcyon days of Urban Meyer. All right, question number two. Michael, the NFC West certainly looks like a one-bid division. The Cardinals at 6-4 lead the other three by one game, all at 5-5. Oh, by the way, your defending NFC champion 49ers are 1-3 within the division. Huge game this weekend in Seattle, where the mayor of Munchkinville can take a stranglehold on this division if they can go on the road and beat the Seahawks. Michael, if you had to wager on who wins the West right now today, which team is getting your money?
You know, my heart wants it to be San Francisco. I just don't think they're good enough. They're not healthy enough. I think their defense is really problematic. The entire defensive line, if Bosa doesn't play on Sunday, that entire defensive line that we witnessed in the Super Bowl and we witnessed that played the Packers in a divisional round is no longer there. They're just not the same team. Campbell's not as good as Greenlaw. It goes on and on. It'll take a miracle for Kyle to really get this thing going. They've got great pride. I mean, they're playing hard. They just have too many injuries. My instincts tell me it'll be the Rams. And they have a huge game this week. I think the Rams were playing better defensively. I was disappointed in how they played against New England, but I thought Stafford was sensational last week, and their offensive line is back. So, to me, I would lean on the Rams here.
Plus 550.
Not
okay.
bad.
Yeah, not bad. All right, question three, and really my favorite question. Michael, you work with coaches across all sports about developing excellence. Last night, Gino Auriemma won his 1,217th game, eclipsing recently retired Tara Vanderveer, for most collegiate basketball wins at any level, men's or women's. In his 40 season at Storrs, UConn has won 11 national titles, had six perfect seasons, reached the Final Four 23 times, including 14 consecutive times between 2008 and 2022. How, Michael, did Auriemma take over a program in 1985 that had no history of excellence and build it into the most dominant program in any sport for the better part of two decades?
Well, because he did the things that all great leaders do. He made the players, he selected players that fit the style that he wanted to play. And then once he had a little bit of success, he built off that success. He then created traditions. He then created a sense of belonging. And then once he got that going, he never stopped being demanding. This whole idea that the 76ers are the perfect example of it, that we're just going to get to the playoffs and we'll be fine. This whole idea of load management, that we don't need to practice, that we don't need to do anything, is really is disrupting the sport. It's one of the reasons why we have nine teams in the NFL that have three losses, because we don't have enough coaches that are being willing to be demanding, hold people accountable. They're too scared. They're worried about it getting in the media, where the media has been very, very critical of anybody who's demanding on their players. When leadership is about pushing people when they go too slow. It's about slowing people down when they go too fast. It requires somebody who's going to drive the train. And Gino drives the train. Look, his greatest saying I've seen is when he talks about body language. If you got bad body language, you're coming out of the game. What did Bob Knight say? Bob Knight said, look, the best part, the only thing that matters, the only thing that resonates with players is your butt on the bench.
Yep.
If I take away playtime from you, then you're going to really feel it. And so you got to be able to have people accountable. The 76ers go ahead and give $200 million to Joel Embiid, you know, for why? I don't know. He's got a bad knee. He doesn't even show up on time. He's so disrespectful to the other players. And you're trying to win with that? Jeff Van Gundy said this. He said, your best player must set the tone of intolerance for anything that gets in the way of winning. You think Embiid does that? Of course he doesn't. He's the opposite. He's entitled. And it's the same thing. Gino built a program that's built on what you do for the team. It's built on a sense of belonging. It's built on who are we going to become? How do we want to play? There's a Connecticut style of playing. It's what most NFL teams miss. It's what they all miss. This is what we don't have. The Giants were one of the teams that could do it one day, but they've lost it. They've lost their manual.
Fascinating. I didn't see that Gino question coming to Mike today.
I want to say this now. Yeah. Everybody said all these records will never be broken. Dawn Staley now with South Carolina has eclipsed. Meanwhile, on the night he broke the record, they won their 43rd straight game. And if they don't get beat by Caitlin Clark in the national semifinal last year, that number 70, okay? If Dawn Staley, now she's 54, she's averaged 35 wins the last 3 years. If she averages 30 wins, if she coaches 20 more years, that puts her right at where Gino is today. I don't know how much longer he's going to keep going. If there's an outside shot for our kids and grandkids, remember I said this today, that's still live.
Well, again, Ovechkin's probably going to break the great one's record in hockey. We all think that Gino's record won't get broken there, but there is some math there that says that Dawn Staley could do it. I remember when she was a point guard at Virginia.
Virginia, absolutely.
I'm getting a little bit older.
Debbie Ryan's teams.
Great stuff, Mike. Yeah. Always enjoyed having you in studio for Palms Pressing 3. Again, everybody, if you're not a VSiN Pro subscriber yet, Black Friday special. You can get it right now. It gives you access to everything we do at the network all the way through May 1st. For just $60? That's a pretty darn good deal. So visit VSiN.com/subscribe. Sign up for our Black Friday special. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Chris Sims going to join the program next. We'll talk everything NFL next here in the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Kicking off week number 12 in the NFL tonight with the Steelers taking on the Browns in Cleveland. Who better to break it down, Michael, with us here to round out this edition of the Lombardi Line than Chris Sims. Of course, former NFL quarterback, does a great job at NBC these days. You can follow Chris on X at CSimsQB. Joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. Chris, welcome back to the program. Michael and I have been talking about it all show, and we are expecting weather, which means possibly snow tonight for this battle between the Steelers and the Browns. How do you think that will affect? I know Russell's used to it in Seattle, but Jameis maybe not used to the cold. Does that factor into your handicap tonight in this game?
It definitely does. I think about it. First off, Jameis is a guy that has small hands. That was well documented coming out in the draft. He also has a motion where it's very looping, to where I could see the elements, if it gets too snowy and wet out there, and there are a team that I think has to rely on the pass game more to win this game than Pittsburgh. And come on, ugly, defensive, low-scoring weather football game? That says Steelers. That has it Steelers written all over it.
Yeah, no question. I mean, Christopher, Winston has never played in a game below 40 degrees. Can you believe this? Never
I
in his career has he
that.
Played in a game. He's never done that in his career.
I know. That's actually surprising to be this long, not playing any elements like that, never have to do it. I'll be interested to see how he reacts tonight.
You know, Chris, we've talked about it. Go ahead, Michael. Sorry.
Well, they had 443 yards of offense last week and still only scored 14 points. And, you know, with the ball being in Winston's hands this much, don't you feel like, as what you just said there earlier, they're prone to turn this thing over tonight?
Yes, prone to turn it over, playing the ultimate turnover defense, right? We got issues at the tackle position for the Cleveland Browns. You got to deal with these pass rushers. Yes, I agreed. And then having to rely on the pass game so much, Mike, Pittsburgh can be creative on that side of the ball in coverage, confuse you, all that. If you have to rely on the pass too much on a night like tonight, I would expect the turnovers. And yeah, I had the Steelers already winning, I think like 24-13, something like that. I'd probably bump it up a few more points now with the weather involved in this.
Chris, Michael and I have talked about the quarterback change. Tomlin did not care what the national media had to say about who should be playing quarterback. That one awful turnover notwithstanding last week against the Ravens, Russ has done a better job protecting the football, those sort of things. Why do you think it's clicking with Russell? And even though it was good with Fields, it's clearly been better with Wilson.
Well, I think the first thing is Russell has got more experience playing quarterback, and he's just a better quarterback within the pocket. Not that he's the greatest in football, we know that, but he's a better pure thrower. Okay, so I think that's the first thing that jumps out to me. The second thing is he's very comfortable playing this style of football. This is very Seattle Legion of Boom type of football. Run the ball, play defense. Hey, in this moment, we need you to make a big throw or take a shot down the field. And he's only asked to do that a few times a game. And he's got a great feel for one-on-one deep balls, especially with George Pickens, who we know if it's 50-50 ball, it's a greater chance than that with Pickens. So I think it's his style of football as compared to last year, Sean Payton, all these checks and all this stuff to do with the line of scrimmage. And I gotta be surgical every play. It's not like that anymore. It's, hey, Russ, we're going to play D. Hey, maybe make a play every now and then. We want to run the ball a lot and control the clock. And I think that's, you know, he's right at home in that.
All right, let's shift to a team you know really well, the New York Football Giants. Tommy DeVito. Explain to me how DeVito beat out Locke, and they gave Locke $5 million. I mean, I know you just wiped your forehead there. I know it's painful, but, I mean, somebody's got to explain this to me, right?
Yeah, well, I don't think I'm going to be the person that is going to explain it to you. I think the bottom line is this. Up here in the Northeast, right, the tri-state area where, you know, I grew up and I still live here to this day, Tommy DeVito's got a little bit of a following. The team stinks. And I think the fans will be more maybe likely to come, a few more. There's a little more energy around the team because of Tommy DeVito being a homegrown kid, New Jersey, all of that type of stuff. I think it has nothing to do with anything on the football field, and it has everything to do with dollars and cents and pleasing the fans, because I think the Mara family and everybody knows the Giants fans are pretty pissed at the Giants right now.
It seems like, again, Michael's been all over this too. When you look at the other team in New York with the Jets and Woody Johnson, what he's doing with this team here, is there, which team has more hope for the Giants or Jets going forward? Because it feels like both those teams right now are in the proverbial dumpster fire.
Yeah, I mean, they are. I still think probably the Jets have more hope going forward. I think they have more pieces in place on their roster, right? I mean, Joe Douglas got fired. I don't think it's because of the talent on the field. I think it's probably more about coaches he's hired were his biggest mistakes. At least that would be my biggest opinion on that whole matter. But I think the Jets are more set up with young talent, you know, and less holes along the roster, but not so much so. I mean, there's still some older guys there that they're going to have to replace. They're going to have to figure out the quarterback situation just like the Giants. You know, the Jets are clearly one of the most disappointing teams in all of football this year. To have that talent on that football team and to have the record and the way they've played is it's embarrassing. I can't even lie.
Let's talk about Green Bay and San Francisco. Big game for San Francisco. They gave another one away. They're the only team in the since 2000 that have blown four-point leads in the fourth quarter to divisional rivals. They've done it three times now. I mean, the Packer game becomes a really interesting challenge for them. Let me ask you, wouldn't they be better off with Jordan Mason going back running the ball than trying to use McCaffrey, who I don't think is still 100%?
I would agree with you there. He does not look 100%. When he hits the hole, it just doesn't look like there's the same type of acceleration as we've seen before. Or I'll even say it's not the same time of same kind of acceleration or aggression hitting the hole as Jordan Mason, to your point. Jordan Mason, I was impressed with him. I mean, he's a starting NFL running back for my money. He's a sledgehammer, let alone we know he can break a lot of tackles, get a lot of 10, 15, 20-yard gains. But I don't think that's going to happen, Mike. I don't. I just think McCaffrey, first off, the talent, the leader he is on the football team, and I still think there's a belief in Shanahan, hey, he's going to get continue to get better, and I think he looks at it and goes, his offense is so much more dangerous when McCaffrey is in it all together. Defenses have to prepare more for it. I hear what you're saying, and I would like to see them infuse Jordan Mason back into the game a little bit for sure, but I don't think it's going to be to the extent maybe that you would like.
Chris, there's only two games on the board this weekend that have double-digit spreads, right? Kansas City on the road, you don't see this very often. As a road favorite, you're 11-point favorites over Carolina. And the Cowboys are getting 10.5 in D.C. against the Commanders. If there's not a chance for an outright upset, which team is the better chance to cover the number, the Panthers or the Cowboys?
Ooh, I mean, I'm not a believer in much of anything of the Cowboys right now. How can you get behind that? I could see the Chiefs a little asleep at the wheel to a degree. Oh, it's Carolina, right? They came off the loss.
And I think we lost Chris there. And Michael, that's the point too. And I'm glad he let us there, because I think both of us look at this and say, the only way we could play it is Commanders and lay the points, right? But with the Panthers, yeah, I don't want to say playing better football, but it is amazing. Look, they do have three wins, right? And they're getting 11. The Chiefs could maybe, to Chris's point, be asleep at the wheel a little bit. Could there be a little danger in the Chiefs in this spot on the road, laying 11?
I don't see it, because here's why. I don't see how Carolina scores very many points. I know they're on a two-game win streak. They scored 23 against New Orleans. They scored 20. But for the most points they're going to score, let's say, is it's 17. Mm. You know, that means they've got it. The Chiefs got to go 28. You know, I mean, the Broncos put 28 on them. The Broncos won 28-14. The Commanders put 40 on them. The Falcons put 38 on them. I mean, the Bears put 36 on them. To me, I always look at these big point spreads. It's what's the total going to be at the end.
Right.
I'm getting 11. I think they're going to score 17, right? So if they score 17, that puts the game at 28. Now, can the Chiefs score 31? Can the Chiefs score 30? See, that's where you got into. And, you know, if you do that way, you take the 11. I think, to me, that's what you – if you think they can score 17, and if you think they're going to score 7, you can't do it.
Yeah, that's a big if against that Chiefs defense. I did feel like the Chiefs played better offense even in defeat against the Buffalo Bills. Very quickly, one number that's changed here, Michael. The Titans are now getting 8 at Houston.
It went up to 8.5 earlier yesterday. It was 8.5 yesterday. It's come back down to 8, right?
Ooh. So what's that telling you? It was certainly some market movement there. Like, I'd be inclined to take the 8.
I think it's telling you nobody trusts nobody trusts. I mean, how can you trust a team that can't cover, and how can you trust Will Levis? I just don't trust him.
That's the problem. Is Will Levis going to make one of those terrible turnovers that we might get out of Jameis Winston tonight? Because, again, as Chris mentioned here at the beginning of this conversation, small hands, it's going to be cold, kind of keeps the ball out there, doesn't keep it tight to the body all the time, could get some turnovers. So, Michael, very quickly, last look, Steelers-Browns. Again, we're expecting low-scoring bad weather, right?
Yeah, and I'm going to take the Brownies in the 3.5 and just trust. It's not an official play for me, but I'd lean that way. But I'm scared to death of Jameis. And what Christopher said, that loopy motion, cold weather, never playing. Huff one, Dave.
We're going to break it all down tomorrow on the Friday edition of the Lombardi Line.